Welcome. You're listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast, the show that cuts through the fog of war and updates you about the ongoing conflict in Ukraine. Don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Hello, I'm Marina Yevshan, co-host of the Russia-Ukraine War Report Podcast, and today is March the 7th, 2024. It has been 3,692 days since Russia started covert military operations in Crimea, 10 years and 16 days since the start of the Russia-Ukraine war, and 2 years and 13 days since Russia expanded its war of aggression. Today's podcast looks at events that happened on Wednesday and Thursday morning. During the podcast, you will find the Russia-Ukraine war map helpful to visualize the areas discussed. A link is in the podcast description. The Russia-Ukraine War Report is compiled by our team from around the world. Today's report includes information from our direct contacts and journalists in Ukraine, the Russian Ministry of Defense, the General Staff of the Armed Forces of Ukraine Morning Reports, Operational Commands North, South and East of Ukraine, Open Source Intelligence, our in-house team of analysts and geospatial experts, and pro-Ukrainian and pro-Russian male bloggers and social media channels with a track record of trying to be accurate. We have one mission, the truth, because the truth matters. There are only minor changes from yesterday's daily assessment, so if you skip ahead, it won't hurt my feelings, because I won't even know. 1. We assess that Ukraine's acute shortage of air defense missiles will become catastrophic by April. 2. We maintain that while Russia holds the initiative throughout the theater of war, the ability to sustain intense combat operations in more than 3 areas of operation has culminated. 3. Additionally, while it is premature to assess that Ukraine has stabilized defensive lines, Russian advances have been significantly slowed over the last 8 to 11 days. 4. We maintain that Ukraine has established strategic control of the Western and Central Black Sea after sinking or severely damaging 8 Russian warships in the last 8 months. 5. The United States has ended financial and military aid to Ukraine unless there is an unforeseen event that changes congressional leadership before the 2024 elections. 6. Due to necessity, Ukraine has shifted to a Fabian strategy to wear down Russian combat power while conserving resources. 7. The Kremlin is preparing to complete the transformation of the governmental structure into a dictatorship, culminating after the results of the sham presidential elections are released. 8. While the possibility of an intentional nuclear accident caused by Russian occupiers at the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant remains low, the condition is more serious than what the International Atomic Energy Agency is reporting. 9. Russian-aligned assets have co-opted the ongoing Polish border blockade, which has become an open act of hybrid warfare against Ukraine and the Baltic states. We begin today's war report in Kharkiv and Luhansk oblasts, starting in the Kupiansk area of operation, also known as AO. The Russian Ministry of Defense reported fighting near Sinkivka with no change in the situation. A video geolocated northwest of Orlyanske showed Russian troops occupying a tree line under attack by Ukrainian tanks supported by artillery and drones, forcing their withdrawal. Fighting restarted east of Tabayevka, with Russian mercenary male blogger Wogonzo claiming Russian troops were forced to withdraw from 3 defensive positions. No pictures or videos, so we didn't update the war map. Russia targeted civilian housing in Borova, striking the settlement with an Iskander M short-range ballistic missile. A pensioner was killed, and 7 people were wounded, including 4 children. In the Kremennaya of Luhansk Oblast, Russian forces continued offensive operations east of Terny and Yampolivka, with no changes in territorial control. North of Kremenna, a Russian 1L219 Zoopark 1 counter-battery radar in occupied Krasnorichenske was destroyed by drone-directed rocket fire. We've got it on video, and there's information in the podcast description on how to become a subscriber. In the Lysychansk AO, Russian forces tried to advance on Bilohorivka from the southeast, without success. Chechen forces are fighting in the area, and they released a TikTok-worthy video of firing rocket-propelled grenades at a bush. Or a tree. Or a rock. I have no idea what they were shooting at, but it wasn't Ukrainian troops. Insurgents reported that rockets fired by HIMARS hit a Russian ammunition depot for the 4th Tank Division in occupied Mistki. NASA Fire Information for Resource Management Systems backed up the claim, indicating there was a significant fire at a complex of barns in the southern part of the settlement. In occupied Holubivka, a microbus carrying 8 people to a funeral struck a landmine, killing 5 and wounding 3. Holubivka and the surrounding area has been under occupation since 2014. Moving south to the Donbas, we start in northeast Donetsk Oblast. In the Siversky-Yo, Russian forces using reconnaissance and force attacked Ukrainian positions near Spirne. They suffered losses and retreated to their defensive positions. In the Bakhmut-Yo, heavy fighting continued in Ivanivske. The situation remains difficult for Ukrainian forces, but Russian troops didn't make additional advances. In the Klishivka-Yo, intense positional fighting continued north and east of Klishivka and east of Andriivka. Pokrovsk was hit by 4 Russian S-300 anti-aircraft missiles used for ground attack, damaging 11 high-rise apartment buildings, 3 homes, and 3 administrative buildings. In southwest Donetsk Oblast, Russian forces have not made notable gains in the Avdiivka-Yo for the 5th day in a row. Almost 90% of the 76 ground attacks Russia initiated theater-wide were from Avdiivka to Orikhiv in Zaporizhia. The Russian VKS, that's the aerospace forces, carried out 33 airstrikes across the same region, a significant reduction from March 1st. In occupied Kamyanka, the Ukrainian 3rd Separate Assault Brigade launched a drone swarm attack on a Russian artillery battery. Not a single battery, an entire company. 2 D-20 and 4 D-30 towed howitzers were damaged or destroyed. We link to the video showing the attack. West of Avdiivka, fighting continued on the eastern edge of Berdychi, east of Semenivka, in the western part of Orlivka, and on the eastern edge of Tonenke, with no Russian advances noted. Further south, Russian attempts to advance deeper into the eastern part of Pervomayske and toward the Ukrainian firebase at Nevelske continued without success. In the Vuhledar-Yo, Russian forces were pushed back to the mineshaft complex south of Krasnohorivka and were forced to withdraw from a tree line northwest of Marienka. The VKS bombed Krasnohorivka with at least one Fab 1500 UMPK glide bomb and hit Georgievka with multiple Fab 250s. Wogonzo claimed that fighting was ongoing in Pobeda, indicating Ukrainian forces had pushed back into the village. Russian forces made an attempt to advance into Novomikhailivka from the southwest after becoming stuck in the center and on the eastern edge of the settlement. The latest attack ended catastrophically, with a video showing 5 MTLB armored personnel carriers and a T-62 medium-duty tank destroyed. A Ukrainian armored fighting vehicle was lost during the defense. There continues to be only limited fighting in the Orikhiv-Yo. Russia launched attacks northwest of Verbove and south of Robotyne, with no change in the situation. In occupied Berdyansk, partisans assassinated collaborator Svetlana Samoylenko, who had been named the illegitimate deputy mayor for economy, agriculture and finance last year. Samoylenko was organizing the sham and illegal Russian elections in Berdyansk, which are slated to start on March the 15th, and was killed by a car bomb. On March the 4th, a squad of Russian soldiers wearing masks stopped 2 members of the Ministry of Internal Affairs in occupied Berdyansk. They ordered the police officers out of their vehicles, disarmed them, and placed them on the ground. The soldiers' company commander arrived and ordered them to release the officers immediately, and they left together. The reason why this happened is unclear, and occupation officials claim that the 5 soldiers are being held in custody for, quote, violence against government officials. The Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Grossi, met with Russian President Vladimir Putin in Sochi to discuss the situation at the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. There was no readout provided after the meeting. The the Prime Minister of Greece, Kyriakos Mitsotakis, came under fire in Odessa while visiting with President of Ukraine Volodymyr Zelensky. The meeting had not been announced. After touring the port of Odessa, the motorcade departed and seconds later a Russian Iskander M hit the port, 500 meters from the motorcade and 150 meters from where Mitsotakis and Zelensky had been speaking. Speaking with reporters, the Greek PM said, quote, "Zelensky and his staff showed us and explained the importance of the port and what is being done to restore and strengthen the Ukrainian sea route, and what damage is suffered during the attacks. At the very end, we heard the sound of sirens and explosions that were very close to us. We didn't have time to go to a safe place. It was a very intense experience." Unquote. The strike damaged port infrastructure and killed five. The European Union High Representative for Foreign Affairs and Security Policy, Josep Borrell, condemned the attack, quote, "The reckless air attack on Odessa, when President Volodymyr Zelensky and PM Kyriakos Mitsotakis were visiting to pay tribute to the victims of the March 2nd drone strike on a residential building, proves again Putin's disregard for any norms and his willingness to escalate." European Council President Charles Michel called the attack a, quote, "cowardly tactic that is reprehensible and below even the Kremlin's playbook." Russia claimed they were targeting a launch point for Ukrainian uncrewed surface vessels, without evidence. The spokesperson for Operational Command South, Captain Natalia Humanyuk, said that the attack was not related to Zelensky's meeting in the city, adding, quote, "It is connected with the terror that the enemy is carrying out quite methodically." Polish farmers protested in Warsaw, blocking roads, lighting tires on fire, throwing cobblestones at police, and attempted to storm the parliament building. Police deployed tear gas, pepper spray, and flashbang grenades and arrested dozens. Farmers said they were protesting unrestricted imports from Russia, Belarus, and Ukraine, and the European Union's Green Deal, which has created economic hardship. Outside the Prime Minister's office, protesters burned a coffin with the inscription, quote, "Farming. It survived for 20 years. It was killed by the Green Deal." Polish protesters continue to block the movement of trucks to checkpoints on the border with Ukraine, keeping the Shahinye checkpoint completely closed. They are also blocking cars from entering Poland through the Yahodin checkpoint. Ukraine has offered concessions to the EU in an attempt to end the protests. Things keep exploding in Russia. In Zeleznogorsk in the Kursk region, a Ukrainian drone struck a fuel storage tank at the Mikhailovsky mining and processing plant. The tank was destroyed and the contents burned off. In Shagonar in the Tiva Republic, the Shagonarsky combined heat and power plant catastrophically exploded in an industrial accident. The blast killed one and wounded 23. Satellite images show the facility was already in a decrepit state. The Ministry of Emergency Situations said, quote, "The explosion took place in the station's boiler room, specifically at the fuel supply point with a belt container." Unquote. Based on the videos and the information from Russian officials, it appears a coal dust explosion tore the plant apart. Here is my theater-wide update. Using their nuclear threat playbook, Moscow head Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov walked back recent statements. Russia will only use nuclear weapons, quote, "if something threatens its existence," Peskov told reporters. That's some weapons-grade gaslighting after numerous recent threats from Russian officials, including President Vladimir Putin. Pro-Russian blogger and wanted criminal Anatoly Shari claimed that he escaped an assassination attempt in Spain, with assailants targeting him using machine guns with suppressors, also known as silencers. Spanish officials made no statement about the alleged incident. Ukraine released a video showing a United States-provided Switchblade 300 one-way drone striking a squad of Russian soldiers. The Switchblade was one of the first military drones provided to Ukraine and quickly fell out of favor due to its high failure rate. In 2023, the US government canceled future orders, in part because the operator station is $53,000 and each switchblade costs $6,000. Ukraine has brought the cost of a controller to under $1,500 and the cost of a one-way drone to $500, with nearly identical capabilities. Ukraine released videos and pictures of the Mark 6 Sea Baby uncrewed surface vessel called Avdiivka. The new drone has a 1,000-kilogram warhead and an operating range of 1,100 kilometers. The USV has entered serial production, with 35 already built. How much boom is 1,000 kilograms? The United States Mark 48 torpedo's warhead is only 293 kilograms. The Dorset Tank Museum in the United Kingdom reverse-engineered Soviet-era tank parts, enabling the production of replacement tank tracks and other critical parts Ukraine needs for its war effort. Germany is joining the Czech Republic's initiative to buy ammunition for Ukraine. Bloomberg reported that the funds to purchase 500,155mm and 300,122mm artillery rounds are almost fully raised and that the desperately needed munitions can be delivered, quote, within a few weeks. Shipment of 100 Bulgarian BTR-60 Soviet-era armored personnel carriers to Ukraine has started. The country is going to provide Ukraine with two S-1 Gvozdika self-propelled howitzers, which interestingly use 122mm ammunition, and BRDM-2 amphibious infantry mobility vehicles. Time for another visit to the land of mobix, mobilization and mir. Yulia Navalnaya, the widow of Alexei Navalny, called upon Russians to protest during the upcoming sham elections in Russia. Calling the action a revolt, she asked that people start at noon on March the 17th and either vote against Putin or take other steps to spoil the ballot. Let me comment on this. In 2014, when Russia held a legitimate referendum in Donetsk, I didn't know much about hybrid warfare. But even I was smart enough to understand the plain truth. You show up at a polling station, your vote counts in favor of whatever the organizers want, regardless of what you do with your ballot. Take your time and draw the conclusions yourself. Armenia officials formally demanded the withdrawal of Russian border guards from the Yerevan International Airport. The Speaker of the Parliament of Armenia, Alen Simonyan, no relation to the Russian propagandist, said that Russia has only weakened border security. Kremlin spokesperson Maria Zakharova called the demand another example of, quote, unfriendly behavior by Armenian leaders. I'm not sure why she would expect Armenia to remain friendly after Moscow tried to overthrow the government last year. The deputy commander of Rosgvardia Omon forces in the so-called Donetsk People's Republic and commander of the Vostok Battalion Alexander Khodorkovsky dismissed those who idolize Stalin and Peter the Great and admitted that Russian commanders were executing their own troops. Khodorkovsky is the highest-ranking Russian official to confirm that extrajudicial justice was being used against Russian soldiers by their commanders. Quote, and I have a more than a sober attitude towards Stalin. His legacy lives on and manifests itself in the most unexpected situations. Recently, the company commander of one of the volunteer battalions was arrested, which is currently being disbanded and will be introduced into regular army structures. The company commander immediately wrote a confession that he had shot his subordinates. Situations at the front are different, and sometimes the situation does not allow you to carry out the order, and sometimes the person himself does not find the determination to risk himself. But not because Moscow was behind him, but because the man imagined himself to be the judge of destinies and gave himself the right to take lives. He shot at his soldiers who came to his unit voluntarily. He will be responsible for his deeds, but I want to note that he is not the only one who has this in his head. At the Wildberries distribution center in the Yekaterinburg region, Wildberries is Russia's version of Amazon. All employees in purple uniforms were rounded up and had their immigration and military registration status checked. More than 30 were taken to the commissariat to register for military service. Russian state media reported that worksite raids just in Yekaterinburg have brought 600 migrants into the ranks of the Russian Federation Armed Services since December. And that's what we know. Your support of my home, Ukraine, helps us make history and protect the future for all.
You've been listening to the Malcontent News Russia-Ukraine War Podcast. To help keep us independent, please consider providing financial support by becoming a patron. Want on-demand news in your hand? Download the Google News app and make Malcontent News one of your favorites to receive breaking news updates. Thank you for listening.